What's up, shelf addicts? Welcome back to the Shelf Addiction Podcast. Today on Book Chat, we are continuing our reread of the Mercy Thompson series. This episode, we are covering book 6, River Marked. Stay tuned. Hey everyone, I am your host, Tamara, and welcome back to the podcast. If you're new here, we're going to feed your shelf addiction with fun book conversations, bookish topics, and more. It's like listening in on your favorite book club. Participate in this discussion by joining the Facebook group, Shelf Addiction Official, or over on the Book Club app. I hope to hear your thoughts on today's show. You can also find me and Casey on Twitter and Instagram. The links for everything I've mentioned are below in the show notes. If you enjoyed today's episode, please support the podcast by sharing it with some book nerd friends or on your favorite social media space. And don't forget to hit that like button and subscribe before you leave. That will really help me out, and I appreciate you for doing it. The uncut video version of this podcast is available right now over on Patreon. Join us there for exclusive videos, including after shows and more. So if you're interested in that at all, you'll need to come over onto Patreon and sign up. As always with Book Chats, we talk spoilers here, so you've been warned. Without further ado, let's begin. Joining me is feature co-host Casey from Heartful of Ink. Welcome back, Casey.
Hello, hello.
Hey, hey. Today we are doing another installment of our reread of the Mercy Thompson series. So we're going to start off with the stats and the synopsis as we do, and then we'll get right to the combo. Mm-hmm. Today we are talking about River Marked by Patricia Briggs, the sixth in series, published March 1st, 2011 by Ace and Penguin Audio. The paperback is 291 pages. The audiobook is 8 hours and 56 minutes, narrated by Lorelei King. Casey, would you please read the synopsis?
Happily. Okay. In the sixth novel in the number one New York Times bestselling series, coyote shifter Mercy Thompson and alpha werewolf Adam finally reach the altar. But when they make the Columbia River their honeymoon destination, their newlywed bliss turns into a fight for survival. Being a different breed of shapeshifter, a walker, Mercy can see ghosts, but the spirit of her long-gone father has never visited her. Until now. An evil is stirring in the depths of the Columbia River, and innocent people are dying. As other walkers make their presence known to Mercy, she must reconnect with her heritage to exorcise the world of the legend known as the River Devil.
So this installment for me, you know, as we do, we give mm-hmm. our reflections at the top. I liked it. There were a lot of things I liked about it. Mm-hmm. It had a lot of aspects I enjoyed, but this was indeed one of the slower Yes. novels for Yes. me.
I try to not get too annoyed with it because Adam and Mercy do deserve their happy, slow moments. And I knew mm-hmm. that the excitement was coming. Like, I remember the big fight at the end. So that mm-hmm. kind of middle part where they're just getting to the wedding and they're getting to the honeymoon and they're just being cute and slow and not doing much of anything, I was trying to just enjoy that for the sake of what it was. But yeah, it's kind of slow and a little boring.
Even the parts where, you know, she's talking to the other Native Americans and they're kind of trying to go to the different locations and figure out the heritage and do like in between the action spikes, it was all slow. So we have a little spike, slow, spike, slow, spike, slow.
It was a lot of storytelling within storytelling. You know, like definitely. They would tell the stories about their history or how the people, you know, yeah, their history and such and their mythology. And then Mercy would tell her stories and then there would be more stories and Mercy would have her nightmares, which were just stories in and of themselves because we'd learn about these people. So, yeah.
And we learn about the people, I guess, just for the sake of making us understand how cruel the River Devil is, mm-hmm. but there's no real reason for it other than that. Like, we don't know these people. We don't care about these people, like, other than them being victims.
Well, yeah, but we need to care about them. We need to know that
I don't.
The river monster is eating a bunch of people.
I understand that they're eating a bunch of people by the way she tells me they're eating a bunch of people. I don't need to see, oh, the girl gets up in the middle of the night and walks to the lake. I just don't need.
It wasn't tugging on your heartstrings that this little girl who just turned 8 yesterday was dragging her little 4-year-old brother down to the river, and then the parents too. And
no, ice in my veins. I just didn't need it personally. I didn't need a lot of the extra flourish that we had on the stories. And thank God at the end, I could tell that Briggs was kind of reining it in, you know, because they would learn about, oh, what about Faye? And what about this? And what about that? And eventually she just started saying, and we told them this, but we didn't have to literally hear all of it.
I think that's a little bit more because we've spent the last 5 books reading about the Fae, whereas this book is the first time we're really getting any sort of Mercy's history. And so she wanted to go deeper into Mercy's heritage. I don't know.
See, I didn't mind the going into like the coyote thing because, you know, that's her parentage. That's important.
Yes.
But I don't know, the different animals, it was fine, right? They all came to action like Avengers.
Yes. And it was exactly like the Avengers.
Yeah, that part was fun. But like the parts when she talked to her aunts, essentially, right? Mm-hmm. It was Coyote's sisters. That was fun. Mm-hmm. So like some of that part, that stuff I did enjoy. I just felt it was a little heavy handed sometimes, a little much sometimes. But I still liked a lot of aspects, you know?
Yeah, no, it was really, it was good to see Mercy learning about herself because, like I just said, you know, the last 5 books have been about everything else. The Fae, the vampires, the werewolves. Mercy knows her history, but she doesn't really know it. And yeah, this was the first time she ever saw the ghost of her father. This was the first time she met Coyote. This was the first time she met other Indians and learned about the history in Washington State. So,
yeah,
this was like Mercy's book.
Yeah, it was really interesting to hear how, you know, Joel Coyote was not Coyote.
He was, but he wasn't.
Like, right. He's not, but he is.
Yes.
So it's like he almost take someone's body for a short amount of time, it seems That's how I would.
Did he just like create the body? And like, because that's kind of how I pictured it.
So, for example, I don't know if it was a human body.
It was a human body, but he said
it wasn't Coyote, a ghost or anything.
No, but Coyote said he just walked into a bar, and I thought that like he just like created the body with no childhood, no parentage, none of that. He just made a human man.
Maybe, but that's not how I read it, though, because like there was another point when they said, well, you let Joel Old Coyote go mate with a human, like he was like a third person, you know what I mean? Not him. So I feel like maybe he's just occupying that space.
Oh, definitely.
And when the guy died.
Yeah. He was.
Yeah.
I read it as he created this body, but this body was kind of like a person in and of itself. So Joe was a real person. He was just kind of created out of thin air. And then Coyote came into that body with him, and it was the two of them together in this body. So there was no childhood. There was no growing up. It was just, you know, one day here's this 20-something-year-old man on the street with no past and no, not much of a future, but, you know. But he was human in that sense, but he wasn't born the way we are born. I don't know. You have to think sideways, like Mercy said, because it's not.
But I wish I could find the passage where it says that he created him, not that he just landed in him.
Let me
or
search
just
took
in my over him.
E-book.
Because, you know, you do have to think sideways about it. But the bottom line is that that man that was helping her this whole time technically is not her father. Not in a human regular way.
No.
Right? Not in the biological way of things, but he is hers because she is also a coyote.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all very interesting. That stuff got kind of wonky. And sometimes that's bad to me because I kind of like some clarity, although because I just like this, I kind of just go with it. I kind of just go with it. I do.
Okay, so it is on page 158 in my ebook in chapter 8. I was bored and lonely, he said with a sly shyness, so maybe I decided to just be another guy for a while. Maybe. Joe made his entrance at a bar in Browning. That line right there, he made his entrance in the bar, makes me feel like he was just a body that was kind of created and then walked into this bar. But
he's not God. He can't, like...
He's like a demigod.
He talks about his own God mm-hmm. being like God. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't say... I don't know.
Says, you have to think about this sideways. But that was the line that made me think he was just, like, created out of thin air and then just walked into a bar as a fully grown adult person.
But he seemed like an avatar in that same respect mm-hmm. because so he wasn't like there. Like Joe Old Coyote was there, but not Coyote. Yeah. So I don't.
Yes. He's an avatar with a human mind and soul, and Coyote is kind of inside him, but also not really inside
not him. Yes, it's very strange. It's very strange in that the chaos of trying to explain that explains the chaos of Mercy. Mm-hmm. Why things work on her and don't work on her. Why she can do some things but not other things. Even it came up when she was talking to the others in her community, like, oh, you don't see the ghost? I thought all of the walkers saw ghosts, and you know, mm-hmm. then we got a little lesson on technically you're not a walker, you're an avatar. You shouldn't be calling yourself a walker. And we learned, you know, mm-hmm. all these other little details.
Fun details, fun history, fun heritage.
It was a lot in there.
It was.
We even learned she had a, what do you call it? A dream, not a dream walk, but a spirit walk.
Yes.
She had a spirit walk when she was a teen.
Mm-hmm. And probably met Coyote and Great Spirit and all of the others. Because I think there was a hawk and a raven and a few others that she met in her spirit walk.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really interesting and, you know, very much like Mercy to meet everybody when she's 13.
Yeah. And even her... And this is going to sound bad, but excuse me, her insecurities at 13 are her insecurities now. She's still not past some of them. Mm-hmm. Like some of the stuff she described in the spirit walk, you know, I'm like, she still got a problem with herself. She had a problem with herself then. She's got a problem with herself now. Like, it seems like she's getting a little better.
She's definitely getting better. But this is something that I can speak to, like, on a personal level, because... Mm-hmm. I am mixed heritage, and I was always told that I don't fully belong anywhere. And it's something that just you can't get over. It's something that comes up no matter what. You know, there was that line where she thought about, oh, I should have just told them that I was Hispanic instead of admitting mm-hmm. that I was Indian because I don't know my history. Now they're judging me for not knowing my history. Like, that's something that just doesn't go away. And she was talking mm-hmm. about how she's still connected or now more connected to Adam and feels more like she belongs. And so it is something that she's slowly growing out of. And it is something that I am still personally working on. So I had those issues at 13 and 32. Like I understand that aspect. And I feel that on a very deep personal level. So it's hard to, you know, judge somebody for having the same issues at 13 and 30. But this is one of those things where you just, if you don't feel like you belong, if you don't feel like you can say, yes, I am this, you have to accept me because I am this, but I'm also this and that, and, you know.
But that's just it. All of us are many things. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get totally off subject, but if we get down to brass tacks, none of us Black people are Africans. None of us. We all have mix in there. We all have other things. It's not as simple as black and white all the time.
Yes.
But we're all, you can be a mom, you can be a judge, you can be a fighter, you can, you know what I mean? There are, we're all many things. Yes. You can be a coyote and a human.
Yes.
you can be Native American and white. You can be a wife and a mechanic. You mm-hmm. know, it's like she needs to learn, her as a character needs to learn how to better embrace all of herself. And that's why I would love for her to be in therapy a little bit. Yes. I would love it.
Oh, yes. Everybody needs therapy.
She's relying on how she feels in reference to Adam specifically.
Yes.
Adam makes me feel this. Girl, you need to feel something. And then Adam is the icing. And that's always kind of been my problem with Mercy.
Yes.
Like, she relies heavily on how Adam and the pack make her feel.
Yes.
Yes. She's always been like that, though.
I feel like, and we'll have to touch back on this as we keep reading, but I feel like this is kind of the turning point for her, and she's going to start feeling more accepted mm-hmm. and really accept herself after this. Mm-hmm. But we'll have to come back, because you're right. You know, she views herself around Adam, and she talked mm-hmm. about that in this book, too. Like, I feel more connected because I have Adam, because we're married
yes.
now.
Mm-hmm.
But now that she's kind of learned a bit about her history and who her father is and is not, and, you know, her whole life, I think she's coming to accept herself a little bit more now.
And we know he's not going anywhere. He is a new character that is now a permanent fixture. He is not going to be there all the time, but he, just like the walking stick,
yep.
he is going to pop in and pop out.
At the
most odd times.
Yes. I was going to say most inopportune times, just to cause
yes.
chaos. Because that's what he
as
likes.
He does. Yeah, as he does. That's his stilo, is let me just create chaos everywhere I go just because it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yay. I wouldn't want him to be my father, honestly.
Or not
that would
father.
Drive me batty.
No, no
or not
relation.
Father.
No connection.
Yeah, not father. I don't know. Oh, what a mess. But I do like his character, mm-hmm. even though he's messy.
He's very so messy. Oh my God. When he shoved her off the rock into the river just to be like, yes, let's find out how big this monster is.
Hello, what are you doing? Like, who does that? Who does that? And he's like, oh, it's fine. I need it. Now we know how big it is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now we know.
Now we know like, how
no
fast it moves. Now we know.
Right.
What it looks like.
Yeah, that's someone you don't want to be around a whole lot.
No. No, that's Daringly. Definitely somebody you want on the opposite side of the world as you.
Yeah, but then he does things to kind of, you know, distinctly help her, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, when the wolf was talking to Adam and, you know, then Mercy snapped at him. You know, like, that's my property. And then he looks at her and the coyote's like, this belongs to me. Don't touch it. Right. This over here is mine.
Yes.
You worry about that wolf. I'll worry about this coyote. And like other points, he clearly is very protective
mm-hmm.
of her.
Mm-hmm.
So when he pushes her in the lake, I think he really ultimately thinks he can save her before anything bad really happens.
Yeah. But he's thinking, you know, in his grand sense of like, oh, I'm so magical. I can save you. It's fine. It's whatever. He's not thinking about
yeah.
the immediate, oh, I'm just pushing her
oh,
in
right.
and not telling her the plan.
The shock that does to the person that you did
mm-hmm.
that to. Like when I've heard of parents pushing their kids in pools before
oh, God.
Who can't swim. I've heard of them doing
yes.
that. And then, of course, they jump in if the kid struggles. But the point that you push them in and you know
mm-hmm.
they can't swim, it's like jarring.
It's and so jarring. And it's so awful.
Yeah.
And it's such a... Yeah. Yeah, no, it's...
That's how he operates.
It is. And I do want to say, you know, Mercy said that she never met her father before and she never met Coyote before, which is all true. But he knew about her and he visited her when she was a kid. But mm-hmm. Charles found him and warned him off, which is a little terrifying. Like, Charles is only about 200 years old.
Charles is one scary man.
He is one scary dude. The fact that he just like confronted Coyote and said, "Nope,
yeah,
you're not coming in here. You go away."
Well, think about it. Charles is the enforcer. Mm-hmm. He is the badass. And she, in the author, even points out at the wedding, Charles smiled at me, which he rarely does. It's so rare.
So rare.
He's the badass 100% of the time. Yes. And the only person not scared of him is his mate. And she like, he's nothing. Don't worry about it.
I think Mercy is only half scared of him because she does stuff to Charles that like any sane person would never do.
She's that one, like, you know how sometimes you have puppies and they are just outrageous and they do everything and chew up your favorite couch and your favorite book and you're pissed off, but you're like, oh, you're so cute. You're lucky you're so cute. That is what Mercy is to them. They're like, you get on my freaking nerves, but you're lucky you're part of this family and you're cute.
Yes, that is exactly who she is.
And just look at you like with puppy dog eyes, like, what? I didn't do anything. That's why she gets away with so much. It's crazy.
It is. Yeah, and it's absolutely true.
If only I had that capability, I'd be running amok too, probably.
Probably, yeah, because it'd be fun. It'd be fun to poke people and see how long it took them to snap.
And you know they won't do anything to you, ever.
Yes, exactly.
That's what's great about it. But yeah, like learning all these little things about how like she ticks and... That was, I think, the best part, I think. But also, like you alluded to earlier, like seeing her and Adam do something on their own, be away from the pack and just work as a team. That's like a different dynamic than we've seen without everyone else
around,
you know, in the mix. Yeah. Yeah.
And even then, you know, during the big fight, Adam wasn't really a part of it because he was stuck in wolf form. He couldn't help because he can't swim and the river monster is obviously in the river. So Mercy is having to swim out there and fight the thing with her little stone daggers. And Adam is
obsidian.
Yeah, Adam is stuck on the beach until it's over. And then he can help her kill the otterkin. But yeah, like it was good to see just Adam and Mercy working through this problem together without the whole pack, without other people running interference, without them running to Z for help or to Siphon for help or whatever. Like it was just the two of them against the world. And I think that they made them a little bit stronger. Like they're already a solid couple, but this was the like, yeah, no, the two of us can do whatever we want.
Yeah, definitely. I thought it really spoke to you guys are paired correctly. Mm-hmm. You're meant to be together. Even when, you know, at the beginning, they had that rocky start. But she's still, you know, even with all the magical things going on here, she was able to be like, look, you made some assumptions. I made some assumptions. We're just going to figure this out.
We're just going to fight.
Yeah, we're going to fight. It's going to be fine. It's okay to fight. No one's leaving anybody. It's just a fight, you know.
Which, to be fair, I would have given Adam the side eye if he told me he borrowed this truck from the Fae. I'd be like, excuse you? Have you not lived like these past 5 books? What are you thinking?
He thinks he had it all control, but they sent him there. They sent him there.
Because they knew something was going down. So, no, I would not have borrowed that. I would not have gone there. It's a good thing they went because nobody else could have stopped this monster and it would have killed a lot more people before Mercy finally got over there. But
and that revelation was hilarious. So she said, you know, she finds out that Edith is the one that essentially sent them, and then she goes, literally, Edith is Yo-Yo Girl. She's like, what?
I mean, Yo-Yo Girl looks like she's 10 years old, like she's harmless, that she can't do anything. But as Mercy says, the younger and more harmless they look, the older and scarier they actually are. And Edith is just such an old woman name.
She goes, a Yo-Yo Girl sent us here? He goes, feeling scared yet?
Want to go somewhere else?
Yes. Yes, let's pack up the car. Let's go. We don't need to stay here.
She looked crazy. Mm-hmm. She seemed like a very dangerous being. And it was dangerous because the outcome of this fight, you know, it seems like Mercy just gets hurt worse and worse with every fight she has.
Yes. Yes, she does. And this one was really, really bad. She broke how many bones? Her leg. She has the pink cast on her leg. She's, you know, stuck in the freaking wheelchair. She's hopped up on so
almost
many drugs.
Stitches. Yeah. It's a mess. And she's
a mess.
I don't know. She keeps going, though. She keeps going for it.
I know. This is book 6 out of 13, and we're still going strong.
Yeah. I'm like, well, you a good one, girl, because I'd have been like, say what? I'm out of here. See ya. See what I see. But that's why Mercy is the hero and not me. Because I don't want to get my skin beat off me, basically. I would prefer not.
It was a really bad fight, but she survived. Yeah. So.
Yeah, she did. As she always does.
Do we want to talk about the walking stick, though?
Oh, my God. Okay, well, let's take a quick break first. Okay. And then we'll come back and talk about the walking stick. So you guys enjoy these commercials. Grab a drink. Take a listen. Definitely hop on over to Amazon and check out the book review journal. It's available right now. And we'll be right back. Stay with us. Today's episode is brought to you by the Shelf Addiction Merch Store. Check out all the bookish t-shirts, notebooks, mugs, and more. Don't miss out on these original designs, perfect for any book nerd. Support the podcast and visit shelfaddiction.com/merch and pick up your next favorite bookish item. Okay, we are back, and let's start on the walking stick. You go first, Casey.
So this walking stick that we have come to love, we know it pops up all the time. Whenever Mercy needs it, it's just there. And she's tripped over it a couple times through this book. But then, you know, as she's killing the river monster, she's out of weapons. She's trying to cut the heart out. She can't do it with her bare hands. And she just calls this fey stick to her and uses it to murder this magical being, which is kind of a very dumb thing to do, but also...
Yeah, that could have went left.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it's funny because leading, while, you know, she was fighting and she was going through the knives... I'm like, where's the walking stick? Where's the walking stick? Show up. And then it shows up. I'm like, oh, I must have subconsciously remembered this or something. But I'm like, this thing, it just, every time she needs it, it's just there for her. But this time, it's kind of gotten a little bit, like it's feeding off of her anger a little bit now, it seems like, after this fight.
Yeah, because the Otterkin guy said, like, how dare you feed this ancient artifact blood from an even older magical creature? It's going to change, I think he said. Like, I don't remember how he phrased it, but it was, if this magical fae Otterkin is worried about what she's doing, I'm very, very worried.
Yeah. And then she, you know, the stick proceeded to kill him. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
Yep.
But coincidentally, we learned a little bit about gifting in her community, about gifting people things when they see things in your home and you give them away. So, you know, at the end, her, you know, I keep saying her father, it's not her father. Coyote comes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he has this conversation, which, by the way, side note, he was very put out by Stefan being there. Very put out. We talked about that. But essentially, before he leaves, he says, oh, what a nice stick. You know, it's so pretty and the this and the that. And she's like, is he trying to tell me something? Would you mind having it?
Please take it.
Please, you know, and he does. And off it goes. I'm like, well, for how long? Maybe he'll rehabilitate it.
I hope so, because We don't want that thing to become evil. It's like the happy sidekick that is very helpful, and we want it to stay sane. If you can ask a walking stick to stay sane.
We want it to stay on our team and not turn her crazy or anything nuts like that.
Yes, exactly.
So hopefully he's rehabilitating it and it will show back up again. I have a feeling we're not done with the walking stick.
We're never done with the walking stick. Or coyote. No.
Or coyote.
If they show up together, it'll be... That would be a fun side adventure to watch. Do we want to talk about Stefan and his little journey in this story?
Yes, let's talk about it a little bit.
So the very first chapter, which we read on our live YouTube read-along, and we had both forgotten how this book started, was with Mercy going to check on Stefan and finding out that he was very, very depressed, letting everything go, letting everything die, not taking care of himself or his people, even though he truly loved his people. It was because Marcella broke him two books ago?
Yeah, 2 books ago, I think.
Bone crossed. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about it then, how it was just so fucked up what she did. How it wasn't just like, oh, good planning. No, this was like, you are psychotic. How could you possibly break somebody like this? And then seeing that, 6 months later, he's still so broken by it. And his strongest
menagerie paying the price. Like, you know, one of his menagerie died.
Several of them died. I think there was only 4 people left, or 4 people died.
Yeah, but they made a point of him being upset about Naomi, like really upset about her.
Because she'd been with him for like a long time, and she was the one who was basically like the human in charge. And they said that, you know, she was the strongest of all of them, but Marsilia broke her so badly they couldn't put her back together. Which I don't know if that was mentally or physically, because with Marcella, it could be both.
I said a little of both. It probably was both, because she was brutal with them. She was excessively brutal with them for no freaking reason.
She did not have to be. Which is why we don't trust Marcella ever.
Right, ever. Exactly. But I felt like, Stefan, you're so old. You're so old. You've been so many places. You know how brutal she is. I couldn't believe he let that happen. Like, he just let himself slip away to the point where the only thing that pulled out of it is Mercy showing up and saying, get your butt up here now. And, you know, fix this. Like, let's go have a movie night, of course. But never mind. You got one dude over here gnawing on the other girl.
Yep.
To the point where she looked like she about to die. This guy looked crazed. I'm like, come on. Like, she's like, what am I walking in on here? What is this?
It was insane. It was awful. It was inhumane.
Yeah.
And they just fixed it by going to movie night.
Yeah. And then, of course, then they had this whole thing, and which I don't understand. Now, I don't understand Mercy's point of view in this respect. She didn't want to tell Stefan to go find more people for his menagerie because she thought it's wrong. Mm-hmm. But that's what he needs to do. But then Adam's like, look, I don't have a fucking problem. Go fix this shit. Go find some people. You know, do what you need to do. And I just don't understand why Mercy couldn't think the same way, especially since she just got finished saying Stefan loves his people. He takes care of his people. He doesn't murder them and do all these things to them. Why would you be so morally like against him maintaining a menagerie? He's your friend.
I honestly don't get it either. Like, if you find willing people who want to do this or have reasons to do this, and you take care of them while you do it, it's a win-win situation all around.
Right.
It's not,
he's not
evil.
Yanking people off the streets.
It's not like the river monster eating this 8-year-old and 4-year-old. Stefan would never do that. He would go find a teenager living on the street who was kicked out from her parents' house or whatever, like, and give her a safe space to stay.
Yeah. So I don't understand why she
was all of a sudden on this high horse.
It was like her reaction back in Bloodbound. Was it Bloodbound when he killed the people from the other guy's menagerie?
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, I can't believe you did this. I will never forgive you for it. And then she eventually forgave him for it, like, two books later. But, like, Mercy, they were going to die. They weren't in good shape. They knew too much about vampires. Even if you tried healing them, they were going to have these issues and these scars and these problems, and they would never be able to be human and fully happy again. Like, it was a Mercy killing. And
it was, and they cannot be going around saying, talking about vampires. Mm-mm. Vampires are not out.
No. Even if they went and lived with werewolves, like, they wouldn't be safe or happy. Like, it wasn't.
No. Like, I didn't get that at all. Mm-mm. Either. I was pissed about that. Like, what is your problem? So she's very wishy-washy when it comes to the vampire stuff.
Yes.
But guaranteed, if Adam or Warren or Daryl killed somebody, she'd be like, well, it's a wolf. What do you expect?
Exactly. She's much more forgiving for the wolves. Mm-hmm. And is it because she grew up with the wolves? Is it because
she's biased?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's okay for this monster, but not that monster. Mm-hmm.
And even though she has a soft spot for Stefan, you know, she still holds him to these higher expectations and higher standards, and he comes close to it, but anytime he slips up, she's like knocking him down three pegs or whatever.
And he's not, like, with exception of how he did his menagerie, I felt like he is old enough to know better. He should have been doing better. But in general, like with those people from the other book, he didn't just slip up and kill them. He killed them for it was a reason. Yeah. And he didn't actually, he technically had Wolf kill them, but it was for a reason.
Yes.
It wasn't like, oh, I slipped up and killed somebody.
No, he looked at these people. He knew that they were going to die at some point, whether it was by his hand or Marsilia hunting them down or suicide because they're so traumatized by everything. Like, he knew they were going to die. And he knew that it was easier and probably better for them to get their necks snapped in this moment than to drag it out.
Exactly.
And Mercy couldn't handle that.
No, but Mercy, you know, it's okay for me to go around killing things. And, you know, if someone actually dies, whoops. I mean, but, you know, it's okay for her. It's okay for the wolves, but not the vamps. And I kind of feel like, now we haven't seen Z, like, kill any human yet, but I wonder how she'll feel toward him when he actually kills someone, because
it's gonna be rough for her. I don't know how she'll take it, because she knows logically that he's not this gruff old man, but she only sees him as this gruff old man who she's worked with for the past 10 years. So she sees him, you know, in that, like, father
figure.
Although
she's seen his natural state, what, three times, she said in the book, she's seen him the other way three times. So she knows he's another monster. He is somebody that people are scared of him. She even mentioned that the Grey Lords are kind of scared of him.
Yes, because he is old and very, very powerful.
Yeah, so it's only a matter of time before he crosses some invisible line you've drawn.
And he's not going to think it's any matter whatsoever. He's going to be like, no, I had to take care of this. I had to do this because reason X, Y, Z. And it's going to be bad.
Yeah. So I don't know. I got a slight problem with Mercy in her that issue. But you got to have something. She can't be perfect.
She can't be perfect. Which is good. Like, we don't want a perfect heroine. We don't want a perfect character, because we want to see character growth, especially in long series. And we are seeing that growth. Like I said earlier, she's starting to come to terms with accepting herself. And I think this was, like, the biggest turning point in her life, where she can start to fully accept herself for who she is. And, you know, not just by who she is with Adam.
Yes.
Although that will continue to play a part because they're married now.
It will. But, you know, though, I am, and maybe I am the oddball. Like I said, some people have told me I have ice in my veins. Sometimes I think it, but sometimes I also think that I've gotten a lot softer in my old age. But I definitely see myself as a separate part of a marriage. I don't see myself as a big blob, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying, with my partner. I will never be that person where, you know, I'm always going to have my individuality. And I hope that Mercy is able to figure that out, because to me, that's not cute. It's not cute. Like, I was just thinking literally earlier today, like, I wonder how many books Patricia Briggs more can write about this world, you know, mm-hmm. Mercy in particular. And when we get to the end of this journey, however long that may be, is she going to fall into that trap of she has to be happily married with a baby on the way to end things?
I really hope not. I really, truly hope not.
I hate that. And it's like, that's one of the things I enjoy about Mercy is even though she is now married to Adam, she is very in her own right, mm-hmm. right? I'm going to fight this damn monster because mm-hmm. it needs to be fought. I'm going to do, you know, and I like that. And I hope she maintains that forever, because I do believe you can be in a very happy relationship and be an individual.
Yes. Yes.
So please don't become this married, and that's all I am. My whole personality is married.
Not to spoil, you know, the rest of the series, but Mercy doesn't quite fall into that. Like, yes, she does see herself as Adam's mate, but she is still very independent, and she is still very, you know, kick-ass.
She does.
And yeah, we can talk about this when Christy shows up, because we can talk yes. about the opposites of that.
And then in the very last book that we read, unless I get them confused, Lord have mercy. So she does something in this book. Unless I'm forgetting, I could be mixing them up. We were being back and forth. Yeah. Yeah. She does something. And then later she tries to apologize. And I'm like, why are you apologizing to me? You would have done this anyway. Was that Soul Taken or was that another book?
I think it was two different books. Like, I kind of remember that happening in Soul Taken, but I kind of remember it happening somewhere else.
Oh, gosh. So, I mean, as of book 13, she still seems very her own self. Yes. But I wonder, as we get closer to the end, and of course, we don't know when the end is she going to morph into this thing?
I hope not. I hope not. I hope she stays true to herself. I would much rather her never have kids other than Jesse, just because mm-hmm. child-free. Like, that would mm-hmm. be nice. Or
I would love it.
You know, if she has a kid, just end it right there and don't tell us anything else, because I don't want to know.
I hope not. I hope that doesn't happen.
I hope so, too. I hate it.
All these different facets to this character, I really enjoy that, even though, you know,
it annoys you.
We talk bad yeah. about her a little bit. I still like it, right?
It's good. It's interesting. It's different. It makes her feel like such a real person, because she has mm-hmm. these lines in the sand that she will not cross. And even though we judge her for that, you know, she stays true to herself.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So, and that comes through in this book. It comes through mm-hmm. in this book. Even... I mean, she's got the newlywed vibe in this book. Don't look at my man. Don't talk to my man. Go put your clothes on, Adam. I don't want anybody seeing you.
Well, to be fair, that one was, he was like very crazy wolf, and she was trying to get him to calm down and put on clothes, and telling him to put on clothes wasn't working. So she was finally like, okay, Adam, I don't want anybody else to see you naked. It's like, okay, fine. But still, yes.
But she's like, actually, it's true. It's true, too. It is true as well. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That one scene, though, when I guess she comes out of the water mm-hmm. and the wolf has taken over and the wolf is like on her. I felt that like suffocation for her, because have you ever like wrestled with someone much heavier than you?
I've grown up with very big dogs. Who are like 80, 90 okay. pounds, and they would lay on top of me. So I feel like, yes, yes, I do know that feeling.
Yeah, it's very scary. Mm-hmm. It's like, you're heavy, get off. And I can feel her urgency. She's like, get off me, Adam. I can't, I'm brave. You know, you're going to suffocate me. And the wolf is just like, you're not going back in the water, but you need to get off. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, okay, let me calm down. Let me bring my own temper down and try to speak calmly. Mm-hmm. And then maybe he will get off me.
Exactly.
But, oh my gosh. I'm like, oh, like 200 pounds just laying on you. Like, get off. I can imagine. Oh my God. Not good.
Not good at all.
Okay. Anything else we should talk about when it comes to Rivermart?
Do we want to talk about the wedding? We talked about it during the live on YouTube, but do we want to talk about it here for everybody else?
Yeah, we can talk about the wedding real quick. It was kind of cute. I liked her wedding.
It was very cute.
Although I wouldn't want her
wedding. I wouldn't want it either, but it was very cute.
Yeah, it was cute. All the people from all her factions of friends and...
Well, the fact is that they bet on it and then her mother orchestrated it to make sure it happened by the day that she bet on.
And her date was like the day after that. Mm-hmm. She came so close to nailing the date.
Yes.
How awful.
Awful or awesome?
Kind of both. Like, awesome that her mother knows her so well, but awful that you're that predictable. Like, oh my God.
You were manipulated so badly.
Yes. You know, she's like, let's elope, let's get out of here. And then she shows up and it's a surprise wedding. Mm-hmm. Surprise.
Everybody's there. Mm-hmm. They'd been planning it. Bran bet against her mother. Now owes her mother like $100.
Mm-hmm.
I said this on the live, but I'll say it again here. I really, really, truly want to see the scene between Bran and Z arguing about who gets to walk Mercy down the aisle. I just think that would be the cutest ever. I want that scene.
You should email Briggs and ask her to write it. Like, do you have it somewhere in your archives? Can I read it? I won't share, but with one other person.
We should email her. We should all collectively email her and spam her.
Like, I know you have this scene written somewhere. I'm sure she's got it somewhere.
She had to have thought of that scene and then written it herself because...
Yeah.
How can you not? These two powerful beings arguing over who gets to walk Mercy down the aisle.
That's so cute, honestly. So cute. Like, they both really see her as a daughter.
They do.
Like, yeah.
Even though they're old, old, old men.
Grumpy old men.
Grumpy old men. And she is chaos in a cute puppy form.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's adorable, honestly. It came together. Like, even I like the scenes with her sisters. I'm like, we never really hear much about her sisters. So it was kind of cool to see the dynamic between them.
And all of the werewolves and all of the friends showing up and Jesse, who was planning so much. And yeah, no, it was so cute and so perfect for them. And I'm very glad we got to see this wedding happen on the page instead of just, you know, we're starting with the honeymoon or whatever.
Yeah, it was important for us to see, I think. And not only that, you know, Adam also knows, okay, we're going to escape right now. Hey, come with me. We're leaving. We're leaving.
Yep. We're leaving before anybody can kidnap you.
Yeah. Apparently, there's like things and traditions where people do things to sabotage the wedding after the wedding. I'm like kidnap the bride. Like, what?
And that was the Faye thing. And then Mercy was laughing and going, you know, the werewolves do stuff that's much crazier than kidnapping. And I was like,
this like what?
Kidnapping. I don't want to know.
I'm like what? I don't think I want to know.
Yeah, I don't think I want to know. But it's so cute.
Yeah. So that was good. It was a fun start, right? So we had some like stuff with Stefan that was kind of jarring. And then we had this really cute wedding. And then we have like the start of this really cute honeymoon that goes left very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, Adam's like, yeah, we need to get out of here. She's like, oh, we can stay one more night. You look tired. He's like, look, I don't think we cannot stand one more day of this honeymoon. We are leaving. It's over. It's over.
I don't know if they ever get another vacation, just the two of them, in any of the other books. I don't remember. I hope they do get a vacation at some point, because this was not a vacation.
No, I mean, it started out like a traditional honeymoon. It lots did. Of sex and food, and you know how you do. And then he turns into a wolf and can't turn back. And everyone keeps saying, oh, on your down? Oh, that's too bad. Like, oh my God. Okay.
But I would say that the wolf makes a very excellent cuddle partner. Yeah. Because she does fall asleep with him one night in bed. And she's like, he's so soft and warm and cuddly. And I love it.
Yes. Good cuddle partner. That's all it is.
Yes.
But you know, everyone's honeymoon looks different. It started out traditional.
It did. It started out traditional. It started out happy. They were good. Mm-hmm. And then shit went sideways because this is Mercy.
Yes. It can't go any other way.
It really can't.
If it did, it wouldn't be Mercy. So.
Exactly.
Okay, so what is next?
Next is Frostburned.
Yep. Book 7. Mm-hmm. So we are continuing this reread. So I'm excited. We'll be back here next week, hopefully, with the next installment. I won't promise, but we should be.
Should be.
If it goes left, it'll be the week after, but
yes.
Next week, tentatively. And we'll get into this. And I can't even remember what this book is about.
Let me see. I don't remember either. But if any of you crazy people are like me and rereading the Alpha and Omega series alongside this, book 3 in that series, Fair Game, takes place right before Frostburned. So this weekend, I'm going to have to try and read Fair Game before we start Frostburned.
Oh, nice. Well,
we'll see if I can actually do it. I don't know.
If you do enjoy and remind me of anything that I have forgotten or need to know, because I will not be doing that. Although I do enjoy those books immensely, I just don't have the bandwidth to get it done.
That's fair. I'm actually questioning my sanity right now. I'm like, do I really want to do this? It's in the mm-hmm. chronological order, but oh my God.
Yeah, because they're fast reads. You probably could get it done in a day, yeah. A day and a half.
Yeah.
If you really wanted to, but don't go crazy.
I won't go crazy. I promise.
Okay, good. Because we don't want these books to break you.
No, I don't want to break myself.
You're like, I can't read anymore. No. So, yeah, we'll see how that goes. You got to let us know next week.
I will.
All right, I think we're done with this. What do you think?
I think we're done now.
Well, this has been a blast. Obviously, you guys know that we love these books. We mm-hmm. recommend them. And we hope you come back next week to hear us talk about them more. And if you have your own comments on these books, feel free to join us in the Facebook group or the book club's app or on our Discord server. And we can talk about them there, too.
Yes.
Yes. All the places. We have so many options available for you. So thanks for hanging out with us today. Before you leave, be sure to hit the like button and the subscribe button wherever you're listening. And we will see you guys in the next episode. Take care of yourselves. Bye, guys.
Bye, everybody.
If you enjoyed today's episode and would like to show your support, there are a few things you can do. Head on over to Apple Podcasts and leave a positive 5-star review. Or like this episode on your favorite podcast player. It seems so simple, but it really helps me out. You can share this podcast with other book nerd friends or on your favorite social media space. You can also join the Shelf Addiction Patreon family. For as little as $2 a month, you will help us produce even more awesome content for your ears. You can also consider joining the Shelf Addiction Official Facebook group, where we talk all things bookish and more in a safe space. The Shelf Addiction Podcast is a part of the Nerdy Maven Network. You can also reach us via email at info@shelfaddiction.com. Thank you for listening.